So we actually did that at a Waffle House.
With that song?
With that song. It was my wife and kids and myself, and we were talking about that skit, and they had a jukebox there. So the girls wanted to play music, so I gave them some money. They went up and played music. And then as we're getting to the end of eating, we start talking about John Mulaney and this What's New Pussycat thing. And I was like, you know, it'd be really funny if we just played What's New Pussycat like 50 times. But I was not going to stay there for that. So I went up there and I only picked it like 5 times, I think. I can't remember how many times it was. And we paid the check and left. So they got to hear that beautiful song multiple times without us being there.
Good Lord, dude.
Yes.
I mean, like, I don't know how I feel about that because I feel like, you know, I don't know, it kind of loses meaning if you're not there, but they would, unless there were lots of people using the jukebox, like, they would know who did it, I guess.
Nobody was using the jukebox but us. They know it was us.
They knew it was you, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I was once at a diner, like it was on a ski trip, and so it was, like, with some couple guys that I, like, barely knew. And we were like sitting at a counter and there was a jukebox and, I think they kind of did like a similar thing. it was prior to like, to that, like stand up being widely known, I think.
Yeah.
I think it did, they just like had the same idea, but it was with, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh God.
I think so. Like it's not exactly the same in that like it sneaks up on you, like it's pretty obvious from the very first repeat that it's happening. Mm. But like they didn't do it like as many times in a row, like so it was more like a running joke kind of.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Especially when you don't have to hear people say what the F is going on.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think they could just turn it off and turn it back on again.
I'm sure they could.
So you just gave them, you know, like, a couple extra dollars or whatever, you know, just, like, for the trouble of, like, unplugging the machine.
Yes, and the satisfaction of knowing that at least for 10 minutes that song played and they were in hell. Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast. With Travis and Martin, we tried something new today, and you didn't know that was happening, but I am a professional, and I planned this all along, because that part is going to stay in the podcast. Ronnie's not here again. He says he's joining. We'll see. I don't know if I believe it. He might be at a Waffle House playing Tom Jones, What's New Pussycat, but we're here to talk about Aftershock Comics, and like promised, we are talking about the books from 2 weeks ago that we didn't get a chance to talk about because this week there are no new books. Sad emoji face.
Yeah, what's up with that, man?
I don't know. Listen, you're a young guy. Do you guys talk like that? My girls say that. Like when they'll be talking about something and to express an emotion, they'll like reference an emoji.
No. I mean, I don't do that.
Yeah. But, not like in a serious conversation. Like if we're having like a funny conversation, they'd say something like, whatever, I don't know. Like, oh, and then the cat fell out the window, sad emoji face.
Yeah, okay, but do they do other emojis too? You know, do they like include the, like, are they like poop emoji or like.
No.
Like just eggplant sad emoji. Hopefully not.
Oh, eggplant emoji. That's for Discord. We use that all the time. The eggplant emoji is Ronnie's favorite.
Hmm.
It is. He uses this all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He loves eggplants, dude.
He does. I love a good eggplant. I'm you know, my family is Sicilian, so we like making eggplant parmesan. It's freaking delicious.
Ooh, it's not for me. Hashtag unpopular opinion.
It's it can be an acquired taste. You know what I mean? And the thing is, you gotta find the right eggplant. Because if you don't find the right eggplant, it won't taste as good. And also, you have to cook it properly. Because if you overcook it, the eggplant gets, like, slimy. And you don't want that.
Yeah, I've never met an eggplant I liked. Yeah, I know what you mean with the slimy. But yeah, I guess we know what Martin's going to be making for C2E2.
Not eggplant.
C2E2 dinner.
Listen, eggplant is not keto.
All right.
I mean, I'll make you some sardines.
Ugh.
Yes. I can't. Nobody likes sardines. What's up with that? I love sardines. I never used to like sardines until very recently, though. I will say that. It's a very recent acquired taste.
I think I may be conflating them with anchovies, which I literally, like, that's, like, poison for me.
Mm. Have I ever had anchovies? I don't know. Maybe. Sardines are delicious, dude. I like sardines and hot sauce. Mmm, so good.
Yeah, I mean, I like seafood, but I don't know.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, like, is it raw? You eat it raw?
Are they raw? I think they're, like, boiled.
Okay.
They're cooked some way. Yeah, they're good. I eat sardines and salmon every day.
Yeah, well, salmon's pretty good.
Salmon's delicious.
Boy, welcome to Keto Central Podcast.
Listen, I said we were trying something new, you know what I mean? Like, there's no new books out. We don't need to rush. There's no news, you know what I mean? February's just about over. March is coming up. C2E2 is in, like, 3 or 4 weeks. You're going to be there. That's exciting. We've never met.
Yeah, I haven't met Ron either, so it'll be exciting.
That is true.
And, like, all the Nerdy Legion guys, dude.
Yeah.
It's
Oh, wait.
It's a lot of firsts.
We have breaking news. Breaking news. We have a special guest joining us on this podcast. Hello, guest. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
There he is. What's up, Ronnie? We're talking about sardines at C2E2.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
Sounds like a plan.
Yes.
Do they go on pizza?
They do go on pizza. Bill Bomer will be eating one.
All right.
Because I've been doing the Geek Brunch Patreon for $50 a month for the past 3 years, waiting on him to eat this pizza, and it has never happened.
See how I throw up the beach ball for you to hit?
Ronnie, welcome to the show. I haven't talked to you in weeks.
In weeks, yeah, I know.
Weeks. You're a busy lad.
I am, whether I want to be or not.
Yep, I know the feeling, buddy. We already started the show, but we're just BSing.
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I said I was going to talk about Pornhub, but I don't think the listeners want to hear that.
No, probably not.
Plus, I've never been on that website before, so it's not like I can tell you what's on there. You know what I mean?
Allegedly, never been on the website before.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
But if they want to sponsor the show, yeah, like, we're open to that.
I don't know if Joe would like that. He'd be like, "What is happening? What's happened to the show?"
Yeah,
dude, there's booths in Aftershock Books.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they just sponsor other podcasts.
Anyways.
Like balloons that have words in them.
Oh, yeah, I never heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I tried listening one time, and it just wasn't for me.
Same.
Yeah. But it's fine. People like it. People like it. Hey, we were talking about boobs. Let's talk about some books.
Yeah. Another B.
Another B. Well, there are...
Segway, wow.
The segue is actually legit because there is a book that had some boobs, and that book is The Last Space Race number 3. See?
Oh.
You see how that works?
Yeah.
You see how that works?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Professionalism.
Yep.
Of course.
Even though,
yes.
Because even though there was no books this week, doesn't mean that we can't show up for work.
Listen, Ronnie, you missed that whole part of the podcast. You're late to the show.
I didn't miss it. I'm just throwing in my 2 cents.
We actually said that like when we first started.
Well, see, that's why we do what we do.
That's right. Word balloon what? Anyways, I'm just kidding. It's a fine podcast.
No.
It's a fine podcast. Go listen to it. Last Space Race, yes?
We missed a week, to be fair. We're doing this week because we missed a week when they actually put the books out. So I think it's a wash.
It's a wash. You know what
Thank
else
you
is
for
a wash?
Being the
upcoming apocalypse as mentioned in The Last Space Race number 3. written by Peter Calloway with art by Alex Chabot. I don't even know if I'm saying that right, by the way. I know I'm a pronunciation expert with these names, but this one Chabot. I'm not sure. Yeah, Chabot. With colors by Natalia Marquez and letters by Marshall Dillon. So, before we go on to discuss this book, I really like this issue because this issue reminds me of a story that I'm writing, and I find that interesting. It's like a convergence of timelines.
Huh. Well, way to be a self-promoter there.
I mean, I'm just saying, I'm never going to publish it. It doesn't matter.
I know.
But
you just feel validated?
Yes. Matter of fact, there is one line in here that's an exact line that I wrote. And I was like, wait a second, what's happening right now? See, Ronnie knows this. Travis, you may not be aware that I am a huge Grant Morrison fan. Ronnie's second favorite writer of all time. Behind
second from the bottom.
Behind Donnie Cates. And
actually, that's incorrect.
Yeah?
Actually, he's second only to Jeff Johns. But,
fair enough. Ronnie actually does like Donnie Cates. So, Donnie, if you're listening, I apologize. Anyways, he just doesn't like Venom. But he likes everything else Donnie Cates. Have you read Ghost Fleet?
But I don't like. I don't tweet at him.
Well, that's true. That's because you're not an asshole.
Well, that's debatable, but that's where the word allegedly comes in again.
Yo, but Donnie's like, he's been engaging with people that tweets at him about Venom, you know?
He does.
Like,
he does.
You know?
He does. And a lot of creators are like, dude, don't engage. whatever. Donnie's freaking
he
awesome.
He shuts him down. He's like, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Muted. Anyway, so Last Space Race. I don't remember what happened last issue, just FYI. I do remember liking the issue, but it did feel like a little bit of a time jump. Did you guys feel like maybe there's a gap in the story or maybe even a change of frame of reference in the way the story is being told with this issue?
Yeah, I mean, we start out in the beginning, right? And I don't know who this guy is that we see, you know, the guy who's dreaming and then who, like, it cuts to he's going to write.
Yes.
I don't know, you know, if that's the main character, you know, like, if it is, then surely it's time jump because, like, he's lost a lot of hair.
So I think it is because when he's looking out the window and he sees the moon's kind of half blown up.
Yeah.
And a lot of this series has been told kind of as a narrative. I mean, you have action going on, but there's an obvious narrator talking in the background through at least the beginning of each issue. And now we actually see the narrator. So yeah, I do think it's the same guy, but obviously much further into the future because he's a balding old man and the moon is kind of destroyed. And obviously there's some other catastrophe about to happen, and that's the reason he wants to write all the stuff down so that the story isn't lost before he can no longer write it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which I like. Again, not to talk about the story that I'm writing that nobody will ever read. But that's one thing that I'm playing with in there as well. So this resonated with me a lot. All right, Ronnie, continue. I interrupted you. My apologies.
No, it's fine. So did it resonate with you because it's basically the same narrative that you're going for? I mean, because obviously, well, knowing you, it probably does have to do with space because everything's better in space. But like the narrative of I need to hurry up and get this out before it's lost history type thing.
Yes.
Or is it just the flow and the pace of the story?
A little bit of both. I like the fact that you're playing with two timelines and connecting them in a way. Mm-hmm. I also liked a lot of what's being said about like human nature in this issue.
Yeah.
Right. Like when he's talking about when they discover the spaceship around Saturn. And he's talking about how like we always thought that like we would be united and like find a way to solve this problem and come together and, you know, better humanity and try to gain technology, whatever. And that's not at all what happens, right? Like the United Nations pretty much dissolves because everyone wants to gain this technology for themselves. And that's kind of something that was hinted at in the first issue of this series, Because you have the Russians and the Chinese and the Americans launching space programs to get to this thing. But they're also not telling anybody, right? And that's something that's discussed in this issue when the colonel is doing the press conference. She's like, oh yeah, it's just military exercises. And everyone's like, well, you're obviously building something. Like, what the hell's happening? Which I like that as well, because I love a little conspiracy theory too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for me, this hit a lot of things that I really enjoy in stories.
Yep. Agreed. And one of the things I really enjoyed was like the different timelines coming together for the same narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, you touched on one of the bees, like in the boobs part.
Yeah.
Like where it shows her as a little girl talking about her faith and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she's moaning Jesus. And then she's begging Jesus because her dad's dying, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And then when she's passed out, wasted, drunk.
Yep.
So I kind of like that's bringing everything together for basically the same purpose, I guess.
Yeah, this is obviously very, I want to say theatrical, but that's not the word I'm looking for. It's like this is made to be a screenplay, you know what I mean? Like I could see mm-hmm. this kind of story put into a movie or a TV show. Yep. In fact, it reminds me a lot of like Arrival, a movie that I love to death. I've seen it a million times. Or what's the other one with the girl from Star Wars? Annihilation. The style of narrative is very similar because you have these time jumps that are connected with like a phrase or a word or a particular action that the character's doing. And I really like that kind of thing. I think it works really well in this comic format as well.
Yeah. It's a lot like Christopher Priest mm-hmm. or Brian Hill style-ish writing.
Yeah.
Because they do that a lot.
Yep. And it's hard to do, man. Like, you know, doing the time jumps to make them make sense like that. It's not an easy thing to do. So, obviously, kudos to Calloway for writing the story. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yep.
Yeah, so, speaking of the time jumps, if we think that, you know, the guy we see in the beginning is, like, the main scientist guy, isn't that the guy that we see in the first issue, like, kind of drifting alone in space?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would imply that he kind of, like, finds his way back to safety somehow, and this is all happening after that point?
That's my assumption. I think we discussed that when the first issue came out. That's one of the questions that we had.
Because you're like, who's narrating all this? Or
Yeah, exactly. Like, who's narrating if this guy's lost in space?
Yeah.
But okay. Obviously there's a lot more going on with the story, and somehow my assumption is he got back.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You know, in this issue, you were talking about kind of like the secret of the government building this thing, and they see through it. Shortly after that, they, like, you know, this picture leaks that, like, gives proof to the world of this UFO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that was somebody on the team that leaked that?
Well, yeah, because at the end because they're interviewing people, right? They're going through dossiers to see who they're going to put on the space mission. Mm-hmm. And when you see those files in, like, the last page or second to last page, it's talking about these people, and it's like, we have a saboteur. Mm-hmm. So obviously somebody is leaking the information, yeah.
Well, see, I thought the saboteur thing was with reference to whatever destroyed the ship or whatever that the guy maybe was on.
Huh.
You know, like, but it seems like there are certainly people within the group already that talk about them just wanting the news to be out so they don't have to do this all in secret.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, who do you think the saboteur is?
It's me. I did it.
Okay.
Dude, if I was on this team, I'd tell everybody. I'd be like, hell yeah, there's a spaceship on Saturn. Because why wouldn't I?
Because they take your phone.
Oh, no. They would take my government BlackBerry. God forbid. Yeah, it'd be fine.
I think they have some kind of OPSEC, dude. They're not going to, like, it's not going to be that easy to blow the cover.
I don't know, dude. The president tweets from his iPhone. I'm sure security's not that tight.
You guys are missing the biggest question of the whole comic book, though.
Ooh.
If we are so high tech and we go out to space and somebody leaks the picture of the spaceship, yada, 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 and then our old character wants to write it down, but yet he goes to the closet to get out an old timey-wimey typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
Why not a laptop or something of that nature? Because it looks like there is no electronic devices, period, in his apartment.
Mm. Well, there's a light at the door.
Well, I'm not saying it's the Dark Ages. I'm just saying there's no electronic devices, period. Like, there's no phone, rotary or cell.
Yep.
You know, there's no laptop, there's no TV, there's not even, like, a radio there.
So it's possible that maybe whatever happened to cause the moon to half blow up, maybe can detect technology, and that's why he uses a typewriter.
Yep. Like an EMP went off, or they made something go off.
Yeah, something like that.
Because obviously, like, when we get set to the time, there's TVs and screens and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
But in the quote-unquote current time, when he's older and has this Hulk Hogan-like mullet, skullet thing, yeah, there is no active techno device.
Yep.
At all.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's worth saying that, like, you know, some people have different processes, you know. So some people, the creative process, they don't like to write a book on a computer, you know. Like, they want something where they write and keep moving, and
right.
And they aren't deleting. So it's just, maybe it's just the way he writes. Whatever this is that he's writing.
I mean, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't think
Well, that explains the typewriter part, but to not have any technological devices, period, that's kind of a little weird, right? Especially in our day and age.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you got a point, Ronnie. I agree with you, Ronnie. Do we think that whatever is going on the moon is still going on? Because it looks like maybe it's still kind of on fire.
Well, is that the case? Or since it's the moon and it's so far away, we're seeing it in real time?
I mean, it's not,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Not far enough where, like, you wouldn't see it in real time.
Well, I mean, it would still take years to get to us, though, right?
No, not from the moon. From the moon, it would take, like, a minute.
I don't know about that.
Dude, the light from the sun takes 8 minutes to get here. So the moon can't be more than like 30 seconds.
You just let me back up my theory, okay? No matter if it's right or wrong.
All right. I'll go along with this, Ronnie. Where are you going with it?
No. We are seeing it in real time, but I don't know if the war itself is still happening, but the destruction part of it, like the aftermath of it burning or falling apart or whatever, still could be happening.
Yeah.
Well,
possible.
That's my 2 cents.
Possible. Very possible. I like that the ship shows up around Saturn, because there's a lot of like mythology and stuff around Saturn, like objects around Saturn. And I'm talking about, like, there's like alien conspiracy shit around Saturn too.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a nice nod.
Saturn is the second, how do I word it? The second heavily populated things around it in our solar system.
Yeah, because it's got like 3 million moons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Only next to Jupiter, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the second largest planet too. So.
Well, yeah, that too.
Yep. Very true. All right. Anything else on this book?
Just throwing out there that, like, I thought it was interesting that they took a few panels at least to talk about this, like, decision about manual control arms on spacecraft versus, like, some kind of automatic system. So I was wondering if that, like, pays off later, that somehow there's, like, a mishap because they cheaped out on this thing for space.
Well, surely it pays off, and that might be related to the fact that he's a typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible. See, Ronnie's onto something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's rate it up. Ronnie, since you joined us late, you get to go first.
All right, since the 4 out of 5 is the 7 out of 10.
The 7 out of 10, never heard of it.
I'm going to go 3.5 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. You're hurting my heart. Travis?
I'll go a solid 4 out of 5.
Travis is a little more than nose, I think. I think I'm going to go 4.32678 repeating.
Interesting.
I really like this book, and I really enjoy this issue quite a bit. So,
well, I really like it too, but I think to get back to the 7 out of 10 thing, I think a lot of people choose 4, like, a lot of people choose 7.
Listen, so you pick 3.5. That is equivalent to 7 out of 10, which is a non-existent rating. It does not exist.
No, because out of 5, your 4 is 7, because that's the most common popular answer.
Oh, is it though? 4 out of 5 equals 8 out of 10. So your logic is flawed.
In that ratio, yes. I'm just saying, commonly given answer out of 5, it's 4.
You're
okay, but
right.
The question is, does it favor integers, you know, or half numbers? You know, if quarter, like, what is the general scale? You know,
let's do this. Let's lose our entire listening audience and talk about the merits of real versus non-real numbers for a few minutes. How about that? No, we're not doing that. Just kidding. Don't turn off. All right. Good scores. Good score. I know what you mean, Ronnie. I know what you mean. A 3.5 is not a real score, but I will grant you this one.
So what's your – oh, you went for
– I don't know. I made some number up. 4.something.
8765309
or
whatever.
8675309.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Who sang that? I can't remember. Anyways, next book.
Tommy Tuchin.
There you go. Next book. Let's go Dead Kings number 3. Written by Steve Orlando with art by Matthew Dow Smith, colors by Lauren Affey, and letters by Thomas Maurer. Has it been like a long time since the last issue came out, or is that just me?
I think for the first two books that we talked about, it felt like it was a long time in between issues.
I'm just trying to figure out like if I'm in some like weird like time loop. Because I feel like books haven't come out in like months, but I know that's not right because they're scheduled every month, and it's like almost March 1st, and I swear to God, it's like January 3rd for me. I don't know what's happening, so I may be stuck in like some weird time loop, you know, with all my revisioning of history. new listeners of Aftershock have no idea what I'm talking about because they never read The Revisionist. Go read it. I'm in that book. I'm the main character.
Oh my god! Along with other books that you are quote unquote in.
Well, I'm not the main character in those. I just appear. Come on, Ronnie, be realistic here.
Anyways, it
felt to me like it's been more than a month since this came out, but I could be wrong. I don't know, because my time sense is completely wacky right now. But good to have the book back. It's this. This book's interesting. I think we've talked before about how some aspects of it can be difficult to follow because of the amount of like Russian words that are interspersed in here.
Uh-huh.
And also you have a lot of kind of made up words that are real words in this world, but not necessarily in ours. Like when Maria's talking about what does she call it? The war? Oh God. I want to say war spirit, but that's not
it.
The war habit. That's it. I did not make the connection of habit as in something you wear, right? Like priests wear a habit. So I'm thinking to myself, like, what the hell is a war habit? Like, why are they looking for a war habit? Wouldn't that be like something you do in war? So I didn't catch the connection until I actually saw Sasha get in this freaking mech suit. And I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. But it also makes sense. Like once I saw it and I made the connection of what a war habit was, it made sense because there's a lot of religious imagery in this book. Whenever they talk about, you know, the war and the different factions in the war, they all had like, you know, the order of this or like the brotherhood of whatever. And so it makes sense that they would call this soldier mech suit a habit, again, because that's what a priest wears. So I thought that was interesting.
The parallels.
Yeah, the parallels. I think this issue still felt a little difficult for me to follow, but I enjoy that it was maybe a little more grounded than some of the previous ones. I'm not quite sure like what the relationship is between the conductor and Maria or Mary, but obviously they have some kind of history from fighting together in the war. Just the way people act is so different in this book than other stories that I'm used to. And I think a lot of that maybe has to do with Steve Orlando's fascination with like Russian culture, which I'm not familiar with at all. I mean, I know some Russian history, but that's about it.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think for me, that's kind of where I get lost. So I want to hear your thoughts on this book.
Righty.
Oh, I was waiting on you.
Oh, go first.
Yeah, for me, it's the same. A little bit different, though, because I am not entrenched in the culture like Orlando is.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff is easy to get lost in, but then it makes me curious of actually what is real culture and what is not, or what's enhanced culture.
Yeah.
And like you, I feel that two main character, what is it, Sasha,
mm-hmm.
and the guy that she tells not to unload his balls.
Well, that's the conductor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
And I feel like they have known each other, whether it's they've done these types of runs before or just, you know, known of each other,
mm-hmm.
because they play off each other really well.
Yeah, so I'm going to agree. I think that I get the impression, at least in this issue, that they're kind of largely past some of the, like, vocabulary exercises that were in the earlier issues. And now they're getting kind of beyond historical references into more solidly, like, sci-fi areas, you know, that aren't necessarily, like stuff you need prior knowledge for or research. As far as the relationship between like those characters, you know, I got the sense that the conductor and Stone Mary basically, you know, they were on the same side working for the same people. And at some point they sent Stone Mary after the conductor for reasons. And we can speculate about what those reasons are, but like I got the sense that he thought of her kind of like a daughter, and so like that drives his feeling of betrayal. But she kind of was, I think maybe even was on the same page, but was still so beholden to the people she was working for that she couldn't think for herself, and she just did what she was told. As far as why they would want to do what they did to the conductor, you know, my sense was maybe that, like, they talk about him making all this equipment that's in this kind of train graveyard or whatever. So I wonder if maybe that was just part of basically putting him in this, like, place exiled just so that he could build stuff for them, weapons and such. That's my take on that.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder if part of the reason is the this teleporting train that that Sasha and Mary are looking for, which seems odd, right? Like, I don't think there's anybody on the train, right?
Well, dude, I think the train sounds pretty interesting because it sounds like kind of a repository of, like, you know, historical secrets, basically.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, all the stuff that they don't want to be in the world anymore, they stick it on this train so it'll, like, nobody will know where it is. You know, like, I don't know why they're keeping it, you know, like, intact when they could just destroy it all, you know, but, you know, it's there. I feel like they're setting it up, and I feel like also they're setting up the idea that the teleporting mechanism is glitching.
Well, I mean, can they destroy it, though? Because, I mean, they need the conductor to find the train because he knows where the train's going to be, so would anybody else know where the train's going to be?
Well, I mean, the people that run the train, or, you know, government or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if all this stuff is so dangerous that, you know, their best solution is to put on a train, like, maybe, like,
throwing it in a volcano would be safer.
Yeah, but Travis, knowledge is power. If you destroy it, then you have nothing to hold over somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't destroy it. You have to keep it, regardless of how dangerous it is, because that's what gives you the power.
Yeah. Well, I guess it speaks in part to how it, like, kind of vague right now our idea of the power structure is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who is actually in control is, I don't know. I don't even think there's really hints, you know?
It's the aliens, of course. We all know that. I just watched the documentary about it.
Ancient Aliens is not a documentary.
For the record, I don't believe in ancient aliens. All right, so I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. It's been kind of a long trip to get to the ultimate goal, right? Because the ultimate goal of this story is for Sasha to find his brother and save him. But it almost feels like maybe that's not, even though that's maybe the plot, maybe that's not the point of the story.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because, I mean, we haven't even seen the brother since the first issue. Like, is he really that relevant?
We saw him in this issue.
In a flashback.
Oh, is it a flashback?
Yeah, I thought that was a flashback. Because wasn't that Sasha? Like, they were getting ready to go on a date or something?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's how I
took it, anyways.
I thought that the guy, like, in the beginning of the issue that was punching a metal wall was his brother.
Could be. Yeah, whatever. That's not relevant. You just see him punching a wall.
Well, he's preparing for something.
Yeah, he's preparing to get broken out by the giant mech suit.
Mm-hmm.
I think also it's very interesting. This might just be like the mindset that I'm in with the story that I'm working on. But there's but I already mentioned like the religious imagery with the habit, for example. There's more of that here. Ronnie, you didn't get to talk about this last week when we talked about Stronghold with mm-hmm. the imagery of the water.
On air, I didn't.
On air, you didn't. You messaged us. But but there's some of that here as well, right? When they're talking about, like, the nanobots or whatever in the blood,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the conductor needs the blood for whatever reason. And Sasha, like, doesn't know what the hell he's talking about, right? But Mary does, because Mary was in the war, and so she understands the technology. Whereas Sasha kind of came around after the war, and so to him, it's all kind of more magic than science.
Right. Nope. Yep, Yeah, that whole thing is pretty amazing. Like, here, the context of it versus, like, Stronghold, like you said, but him, it's more magical style. I don't know if that's, because I thought the same thing too, but I didn't know if it was because of, like, the Russian culture part of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, sorcery. Is that what's happening and not, like, scientific?
Well, I mean, like you and I kind of briefly had this on Twitter with or chat with Sparky and Dave, where, like, you get to a point in society where real life events
mm-hmm.
aren't real life to the people living there. And so they become kind of like fantastical stories, and you just kind of use the words that you have to explain something. That if you actually knew what it was that you were explaining, it would be explained differently, right? Like,
right.
How would you explain to, like, a lost tribe in the Amazon how planes work or how computers work?
Right, right, exactly.
Right? Like, the easiest way to do it would be just to explain it off as magic.
Yeah.
And so it almost has that feel in this. And I really like that because it's not even, like, that far into the future from this great war that happened.
Right.
Right? Like, the stuff is still around. The machines are still around. They don't work because nobody knows how to use them, but they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially, like the train or that type of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, and I mean, we have advanced technology. Like, I don't know how to explain a teleporting train. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah, cool stuff. Yeah, this was an interesting issue. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You guys want to wrap this one up? Yes.
I'll just add that I think that there's, like, some interesting character work here, kind of, where, like, you had this moment where Sasha was like, I like, whatever, I'll die, you know, I'll die to do this. And, you know, then he gets himself into a position where that's no longer an option because, you know, Stone Mary is basically like, no, you're going to live so that you can do this thing. So, you know, like, I thought that was an interesting moment. I still am confused whether there's, like, some kind of symbolism behind the bomb being in his testicle. Right? Like, it's a plot point. So, but I've been really grappling with what, why that.
I mean, that seems to me to be the most obvious place to put a bomb is in a testicle.
Oh, because you, yeah, because they don't pat you down there. Okay.
Yeah.
They don't?
All right.
No, like, they don't touch your junk.
I've been going to the wrong airport.
They touch your junk?
No.
Or the right airport. You pay extra for that kind of...
Oh, man.
Visit Pornhub.com.
Proud sponsor of the Aftershock Central podcast. Since when did the internet come about? Anyways, all right, let's rate it up. Travis, you go first on this one.
Okay, I like this one. I'll go 4.5 out of 5.
All right. I will also go a 4.5 out of 5.
I'm going to go 4 out of 5 on this one.
Man, you're such a
even
downer.
Even though it breaks my rule.
You're such a downer.
No, I think I would have went 4.5 out of 5, but it took like the first couple of pages for me to get back into the story.
Yep.
Because just like you said, like it felt like it was forever ago since issue 2 came out.
Yeah.
Which in reality it probably wasn't, but when you read like 30, 40 comics a week, a month, whatever.
Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I just read too many comics. dang it. All right. Ronnie, since you weren't here last week, I'm going to let you pick the next book. You can choose either Dark Ark or the Lollipop Kids.
Let's go Dark Ark.
All right. Dark Ark number 14. Written by Cullen Bunn with art by Juan Doe, letters by Dave Sharp, and still don't know who these guys are. But I like that that's the way the book starts.
Okay, what I was throwing this out there. What if it kind of is something off of more like the Egyptian pantheon?
Mm.
You know? Because there is a pyramid there.
There is. However, there's pyramids all over the world. In fact, China has the most pyramids of anywhere in the world.
Yeah. I mean, they probably started out closer to Egypt than China, but point taken.
Yes. Just saying.
What about Mayans? Don't Mayans have pyramids?
Mayans also have pyramids. They have step pyramids.
Okay. Because, I mean, they're like deep in the jungle here.
Yeah,
and if we were in Egypt, it really wouldn't be vegetation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, these are – they're not quite stepped. These look closer to like ziggurats.
Like cigarettes?
Not cigarettes. Ziggurats.
Yo, I only vape, dude.
Which are Mesopotamian-style pyramids.
Okay.
They're kind of stepped. They're temples. They have, you know, windows and crap on them. That's kind of what they look like in here, which I guess maybe could kind of make sense to, you know, based on where the Noah story would come from, Middle East area. So I thought, to me, like, these guys are just obviously demons. They're Lucifer's army, and that's the reason why there's wings all hanging on the trees. This to me, this was kind of the place where the armies of God and the armies of the devil fought after the devil said, screw this place, I'm out.
Hmm. Interesting. 'Cause...
Well, I thought that Next said that they, you know, didn't, like, they had a different benefactor, that it wasn't God or the devil, but somebody else.
Well, they don't know that.
Know who they are.
They don't know that. They just met these people.
Mm-hmm. OG demons.
They're OG demons. Yeah. So, which really goes into what we've been trying to figure out the whole time, is did Shrey actually talk to the devil?
Right. See, and I guess it lines up with that too, but I took the wings just being on display there is like angels or whatever came, like scouting even, and they just slay them there, and then this is like their trophy type thing. Or so, not to mess with us type thing. This is, you know, we're just hanging it out there.
So initially I also thought that, because they talk a lot about how it seems like these people are very protective of this place. They've been here for a long time. But then when they're bringing them kind of into the city and you see the pyramids around and all the wings and you have the halos or whatever on the ground, there is a metric crap ton of dead bodies. And because this is kind of a play on the Noah's Ark story, I immediately went to a biblical story, and that's why I assumed maybe this was kind of the place where this giant battle between angels and demons kind of took place. And I don't think that that really goes against anything that we've read about in this story before. I mean, we've seen angels before, and they obviously don't give a crap about anything that's going on with Noah's Ark or Shrey's Ark. And my assumption now is, well, the devil doesn't care either. Whoever contacted Shrey is neither God or the devil. Those two beings are just kind of, they're doing their own thing and, don't care what people are doing. One of those things where like they're changing the biblical story that we know into something different.
And yeah, right. Okay. That makes sense. I can go with that.
Well, you could also wonder kind of what they're doing, you know, like they've abducted, you know, mostly kind of these monsters and a few humans with them. We see them stringing up monsters in the trees and, you know, bleeding them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I don't know, like humans bleed stuff before they eat them for meat. But, you know, like, you could also be using monster blood for magic.
So there's a panel where they're bleeding a monster, and they just put the blood in a cup, and the cup is glowing. So my assumption is they drink the blood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's for nourishment. It may be some kind of magical thing. But I don't think they actually eat the bodies. I mean, you know, there's several panels when you have, like, tons of bodies laying on the ground. They don't seem like any of them were eaten. They're just kind of decayed after death.
And rotted.
Yeah.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Oh, episode title. Good job, Ronnie.
That's what I do. I took it as, like, the blood is your life source, right?
Yeah.
And it could also, since we're on the same thing, it's like, well, yeah, because it was all blood, not just the human blood.
Yeah.
But like as their life source, and that's why it was glowing, was to, that was their thing. So they were taking our life force, or not ours, but the character's life force from them.
Yep.
So.
Yep. That's not new either. Like there's plenty of myths about that kind of thing, or like forming beings out of blood or whatever.
Or you turn into werewolves.
Yeah, there you go. The werewolf thing. There's like new research about, they did it with mice, not with people. But putting young blood into old, like, rats or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not a Liefeld fan.
I see. That's pretty good, Travis. I'm going to give you that one. You get you get one of those. That's good. Yes, young, second word blood, not the terrible '90s comic.
Whoa!
Hey, it's still very fun.
It wasn't terrible in the '90s.
It was not terrible in the '90s. Going back though, not so good.
Yeah, agreed.
The new book though is very good. Who's the one writing it? Chad Bowers?
I don't know. It's not Aftershock. I don't read it.
Oh, you're such a liar.
Just kidding.
How do you read 40 books if you're only reading Aftershock?
Because I read them over and over, Jeff.
You just read The Revisionist over and over again is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So question for you guys. What is the mysterious object that these things are afraid of in the Ark?
Well, it looked like a cauldron to me or something.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, it seems like the implication is that Callie, like, checked it out and somehow seems like it led her to make a deal with the devil, famous Shraded, right? Because, like, she's got powers at the end of the issue.
Right.
So it's like the opposite of the Holy Grail?
It's the unholy grail.
Yeah.
Oh, you see what I did there?
I did.
That was a Cullen Bunn book.
Too, right?
Oh, man, yeah. We're good. We're so good. This episode is sponsored by Pornhub.
Oh, man. At least it's not two girls, one cup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're talking about.
What do you think of this?
I have no idea.
Oh.
That's why I was asking.
Right. Oh.
Well, I mean, it's clear she goes to it, and then it cuts away, and then, you know, her friend is like, hey, are you okay? Like, you know, you're acting weird, and then she's got powers.
Yeah.
So, something in that chain of events.
Yep. So, I just have one final thing. My favorite new monster is whatever this flying head thing is.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
She's freaking awesome. I don't know what it is. It's weird looking. Makes no sense to me, but I love it.
We'll have to ask Colin.
True. Yeah. Very true.
I still love Kroll, though.
Yeah, Kroll's pretty good.
He steals the scenes every time he's in one.
I like his interaction with that other, the demon vampire thing or whatever. He finds that spear with the dragon claw on it, and he's like, oh. He's like, you're weak. He's like, I'm not weak. I found the spear. He's like, where the hell did you find that spear? It's got a dragon claw on it. He's like, oh, I found it over there with the dead bodies. He's like, well, okay, fine. Maybe you're okay to join the fight. He's like, yeah, I'm okay to join the fight. I'm not weak. I'll come in there. He's like, well, hopefully that's good enough for you. He's like, you seem kind of I can't remember what he said. Something like a wimp or something. He's like, I'm not a wimp. He's like, especially if I can get whatever Kroll's girlfriend's poison or whatever. And Kroll looks at him and he's like, you want her poison? He's like, yeah, the poison will help me fight these guys. He's like, Kroll doesn't care if you get the poison. Get the poison. I don't know. He reminds me of Mr. T. Kroll is the Mr. T of the monsters.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Okay.
I pity the fool who took my cub.
Uh-huh.
All right, but isn't it cruel?
Eh, whatever.
Like
the donut.
Like, it's a weird name, but he's also, like, cruel.
Yeah, sure.
And he's also cool.
Yeah.
Yes.
I need a
pop. Too cruel for a school.
Oh, man, oh, man. What has happened to the show? All right. Let's wrap this one up. Ronnie, give me a score.
Okay. I'm going 4.5 out of 5 on this one because, and I think that's pretty been my general score for this, just because I love the mythology part of it and the spin on everything.
I get it, man. Cullen's your friend. You got to give it a good score.
Well, it's not just because it's Cullen.
I'm just messing with you, man.
I'm not a star cruncher.
Yeah, then you have to be some kind of all star and some podcast to be a star crawler.
Yeah.
Nobody will get that, but you and I get it. That's all that matters.
That's what matters.
Cool. I'm with you. I'll go 4.5 as well. I'm digging it. And I like that he keeps throwing new stuff into the story, you know?
You're only giving it 4.5 out of 5 because he's on our podcast network.
After C2E2, I might give it a 5 out of 5 if we do a tequila cast together. Jesus Christ.
We might not make it that
bad. Oh, man. I gotta tell you. Sorry, Travis. I know we haven't met, and I'm excited to meet you, but the person I'm most excited to meet is Cindy Bunn.
Oh, is she going?
I don't know. Is she?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her.
Yeah, find out.
Yeah, she is now.
Yeah. All right, Travis, give me a score.
All right, I'll go 4 out of 5.
Yeah, shame on you.
And I just hope we get to who these, like, analytic porn guys are, you know, because they've been around for like 5 issues or something, and it's still, we're, I don't know, we're not a lot closer to knowing, so.
They're jackalopes.
They're jackalopes. That's a deep 90s cut. Listen, there's children that listen to this podcast. They don't know what a jackalope is.
Well, now they will after they Google it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go to pornhub.com and search for jackalope.
Oh, man. Now I'm tempted to do that. All right. Last book. Last book is The Lollipop Kids, number 3, written by Adam Glass. Diego Yapur is the artist. We have story by Adam Glass and Aiden Glass, colors by DC Alonso, and letters by Sal Cipriano. I bet he likes eggplant. See, Ronnie wasn't here for that part. It's okay. We talked about eggplant parmesan, Ronnie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the eggplant emoji.
We also talked about that and how it's your favorite emoji.
Well, you know.
If the emoji fits.
That's right.
Don't sit.
You must quit.
Don't sit in the eggplant. It might hurt. All right. Travis, why don't you you kick off a discussion on this one?
Okay. So this issue, right? Basically, one of the Lollipop Kids rescues the main boy, Nick. Takes him back to the Lollipop War Room. And then kind of like directs him into the shrine for his mother, which is like the house of Zion. He sees this vision of his mother that, you know, is either, I'm guessing it's some kind of like hologram recording, and like gets the spiel, then gets like these magical chain things. That's her weapon. And then meets her sister, who's apparently the leader of the Lollipop Kids.
Yes. Which we saw the sister in the first episode, first issue.
In flashback, right?
Was it? I thought it was like real time. That was a flashback?
Yeah.
Well, I thought the whole story starts out from the perspective of like Nick wants to give her a present and
is
looking for her. Like, where is she? She's missing. She didn't come home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but that's clearly she's fine. So, you know, there's a question there of where was she, you know, was it just kind of a ploy to get Nick out to the park?
Well, I mean, after this issue, probably, yeah.
Yeah, like, she seems fine. So, either she was detained on, like, a mission or something else.
Yep. Yes. Yes. This was definitely more of a transitional issue. Because even though you had some action at the beginning when Nikki's trying to run away from the ghoul, there wasn't really a whole lot that happened, right? I mean, stuff happened that I think is important to set up this world, but there wasn't, like, a lot of action. There was more of character development stuff with Nikki learning about the House of Zion and then wanting to know about the House of Stuyvesant and his sister being there and whatever. We also get some interaction between the different Lollipop Kids and how seemingly none of them like Nikki, except for the one girl that's kind of protecting him. Fresno, that's her name. How could I forget?
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Have you forgotten my name already?" No, your name is Fresno.
And a cool call back to Rough Riders.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because Teddy Roosevelt and Harry Houdini were both... And I think Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah, Susan B. Anthony.
I know Billie Holiday and Tupac were Lollipop Kids, but I think Susan B. Anthony was also a Rough Rider and one of the free one that showed us all of them.
Yes, yes. Tupac. That's why he disappeared.
Yeah. Tupac Shaker.
We all knew Tupac's not dead. Everyone knows this.
Yeah.
It's a conspiracy theory that the man wants you to believe. Tupac's alive. He's down in Central Park.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
He's with Michael Jackson and Elvis.
I don't know if Michael Jackson would be a Lollipop Kid.
Yeah, I don't think Elvis would be either.
Elvis, yeah, probably not.
But he did like peanut butter mayonnaise and banana sandwiches.
Have you ever tried that? It's terrible.
I don't like mayonnaise that much.
See, I like mayonnaise, but that sandwich is terrible.
I like peanut butter bananas.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, banana peanut butter is good.
Yeah, I just love peanut butter, so, you know. Maybe put some peanut butter on some sardines.
Oh, man, that sounds dreamy.
Yeah.
So I'll bring peanut butter and sardines to C2E2, and you can tell me how it tastes.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan.
Only if you remember Nick's jerky.
Yes. I will probably forget. Anyways, back to this book. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I don't know if I have a whole lot to say about it. It was pretty straightforward. I like the build up of the world and the characters, and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. I want to see kind of where we're going, right? I don't know if they've mentioned how long this series is going to be. But if it's like Rough Riders where you get, what was that, six issues a piece?
Per volume.
Yeah, per volume.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're at a place where like we kind of need to get into like what the big bad is. Because really all we've done for three issues is introduce the world of the Lollipop Kids. And that's not a bad thing. I think it's fascinating. I love it. But I want to know like how this relates to the rest of the world now that Nikki knows kind of what's going on. And I think next issue will be really interesting when Nikki has to kind of come to terms with his sister being there.
Yeah. Agreed.
Question for you guys. Why would his sister choose the axe and not the chains? I mean, I have an idea, but I want to know what you guys think.
Well, I don't know that the choice was given to them, you know, like, I don't know, like maybe the, whichever one they direct you to, that's what you're stuck with, you know?
Hmm.
Interesting. I think it was symbolic, really, because the sister, I think she fully embraced going at it as to where he didn't want to, so it was like holding him down or back or whatever.
Hmm, okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't really have an answer. I mean, I could maybe guess, like, just simply based on how they're greeted at each of these houses or whatever. You know, the mom's got this, like, fancy hologram set up, and, like, the place is super cool looking and very, like, symbolic with the, dogs or whatever they were. And the jackal people with the spears. Like, it's all really cool looking. And then his dad's house is kind of a dump, right? Like when he goes in there, he's like, "Well, this is it." Like that's kind of dumb.
Well, I thought they explained that, like where his mom was like the hierarchy and royalty or whatever, and then like his dad's family was like Dutch minimalist.
Yeah.
So I mean, you wouldn't have a big cathedral in a Dutch minimalist.
Sure. No, I get that. But I wonder if some of the way that all that is set up has to do with, like, their parents realizing who would pick what.
Yeah.
Right?
So, Mia identifies more with the everyman?
Yeah.
As to where, like, Nikki is, like, the mama's boy type?
Yeah, the mama's boy and, you know, like, really curious about this fantastical place. So, like, the way to get him in is with this fancy show that the mom has in her place. Like, if he had gone to the house of Stuyvesant first, he would have been like, this is dumb, I'm out of here.
Yeah, true.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption was just that, like, that the, you know, they didn't take him to Stuyvesant for a reason, you know? Like, there was a message that greeted him here. What if there was a message that greeted his sister at Stuyvesant or whatever, and you just didn't know because it wasn't for Nick? You know,
I mean, it's possible, but if the sister was already there, maybe she got to choose which one she wanted out of the two. And the reason they took him to Zion first was because they already knew that the sister chose the House of Stuyvesant. So there would be no point in taking them there, right? Because when he tries to go there, they're like, well, wait, like, don't go in there. He's like, yeah, I just want to see.
Well, also, like, Mia wasn't, or from what we see of her or and know of her, she's not like a hard sell to be in the Lollipop Kids either.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't need the big magical, fantastical type thing.
Very true.
As to where he's a hard sell. So it's like, hey, you know, PR work.
Mm-hmm.
Or marketing, I guess.
Every good monster fighting team needs a good marketing team.
That's right. Just ask Monster Squad, the best movie that you've probably never seen.
The original or the remake?
The remake does not exist.
Yeah, exactly. See? Ronnie gets it. All right.
Honestly, I didn't even know there was a remake.
Yeah, so. There was a remake. I think it came out like mid-90s, or maybe after that. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Not good. Forgettable.
All right.
All right.
Rate it up.
Let's rate it up. I'm going to rate it, just to spite Ronnie, a 4.00001.
Well, I'm going 4.5 out of 5 because I've enjoyed this book ever since issue one.
I will go 4 out of 5.
Yep. Now who's the Debbie Downer?
That's right.
But Travis. I would go 8 out of 10. So there you go.
See? Travis understands the inner workings of the scoring system.
Yeah. Well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Next week, we have 2 books. We have Oberon number 2 and A Walk Through Hell number 8. Will we ever get answers in A Walk Through Hell? My assumption is no. But I'll still love reading it.
Yep.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening to our catch-up episode of the Aftershock Central Podcast, brought to you
by Audible, not Pornhub.
By not Pornhub. Thanks for listening. You can catch us on Twitter at Rumbar316, at The Great Magnet, at Geekvine, at Aftershock Pod. If you will be in Chicago March 21st through the 24th, we will all be there. Drinking tequila with Colin Bunn. That's it. Yeah. We'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.